Podcast presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and hour three on what's been another show, more or less, focused on AP Indy. And I knew the minute I asked Neil Drysdale yesterday about AP Indy as a young horse, the minute he said Bill Harrigan, I said we got to reach out for Harrigan, because you see his name. Particularly early in the season at Keeneland, where he'll send out a couple of young horses before they move on to new homes. But his name among horsemen is just so well known and so respected. And his work with horses that go from yearling prospect and yearling sale toppers to the racetrack or on to pinhook sales or anything else is just as good as it gets. And it's, as I said, overdue pleasure to have Bill Harrigan join us. Bill, good morning.
Hi, Steve. Thank you. Good to be on the show. Appreciate you asking me.
Not at all. And you know, it took AP Indy, but I guess why not? That's not a bad place to start and to be so associated. I mean, there's so many more we can talk about, but we'll start with AP Indy. And, you know, like I said to Dr. Alday and to Neil Drysdale, a passing of a horse like this that you had your hands on, it sure, he was 31, but it still has to touch you.
It does. He has a very dear place in my heart. You know, when I got him through APN, he developed a couple of great lifelong friendships. Number one, through the man that bought him, Noel O'Callaghan from the BBA Ireland. And then Noel hired Neil Drysdale. And so through APN, I became very good friends with Neil. And then later his wife Sean, and a great association. I've had horses and still have horses for Neil Drysdale to this day.
Very similar to the way Dr. Alday introduced, you know, the conversation. And over the years, when Steve's been with us, he's been the house veterinarian for the whole run of At the Races. He referenced AP Indy so often. From your experience, and at that point, it would got to be talking 1991, I suppose, right? Is that right?
No, he came out of the July sale. That's back when Keeneland had the summer July sale. And Noel O'Callaghan was, there was two main sharp eyes for the BBA Ireland. One was Tom Cooper, and Tom passed away, Mr. Cooper to me. He passed away earlier that year. So the whole BBA Ireland kind of had this heavy heart. And then Noel stepped in there, and he bought the two high-priced colts out of that July sale, one being AP Indy, and then he bought another horse by Fappiano, who was a full brother to Tappiano, a very good filly that Scotty Schuhhofer trained, and he paid $2.9 million for AP Indy, and he paid $2.1 million for this other colt who would go on to become AP Jet. And the year before that Noel bought these horses, he had bought a horse by Aladar that went on to be champion in Japan, named Lindo Shaver, for the same owner, Mr. Suramaki. And so, you know, right on the heels of that, Mr. Suramaki was all fired up about sending Noel back to the sale and, you know, go over there and buy the best ones they have, which he did. And, you know, Noel was an incredible eye for a horse and just an awesome man. A real man's man, everybody loved, from Don Magner to the smallest guy. And I was fortunate to get hooked up with Noel through a friend of ours named Mike Shannon. And so I get these two horses right in July, right off of the Keeneland grounds.
How about that? How quickly at that point do you start to work with them, or do you let them romp around a paddock for a couple more months?
Well, we typically start breaking the yearlings in September, so
yeah,
we got them home and we just turned them out, and at that point, they would stay out all night, get brushed over, and they came out of the fence. They were very easy to work with.
Oh, Bill, Casey, you might want to pick up on Bill if you would, and let's try to improve that reception. All right.
Is that any better?
Yeah, well, that is better, actually. Yes, I was gonna have Casey pick you up and see if we reconnect. But yeah, I lost you. It started to go kind of electronic and hollow on us, and then we lost you completely.
So I don't know where you lost me, but we would, at that point in July, we'd turn them out all night and bring them in the day, and then we started to work with them in September. And, both the colts, they were obviously, you could tell by their price, but they were men among boys. And, AP Andy, he'd been by himself for quite a while, and, he was pretty spunky. But we had a good facility, a good round pen, and a good shed row, and we got them going. And obviously it was a big thrill for me to be working with two horses that they were kind of headline horses. And but we didn't really treat them any differently from any of the other horses as we would.
And I got to ask and interject a question about that stage of your career too, because you had to be, in your early 30s?
Correct, yes. So, and these horses were, at that time I was the manager for Esom Ferris Farm, F-A-R-E-S. And we did not have that many horses over there. So he was letting me take outside horses to break, and because I had that experience. And we started turning out horses that went on to be very good at the races. And it's just fundamentals that you're teaching them how to be ridden. You're not training them, you're just giving them a good barn foundation and really just how to be ridden. By the time Neil came to see them in November, they were jogging and cantering and figure eights in this nice open field we had. Really kind of picturesque, surrounded by trees. And it was a good size, say about the size of a polo field. And they were just going through just switching leads in the middle of these figure eights. And, Neil walked out of the barn down there. And, I could see, he's like, whoa. And so we sent them to Hollywood Park that time, and sometime probably the middle of January-ish, as well as I can remember. And so they were, very well broke, but had never been on a track. But and that always worried me, but as I found out through the years, that's never a problem. If they're really taught how to be ridden well, they don't have any problem adjusting to the track. So anyway, because of the success of one two-year-old over there, Mr. Shuramaki and Noel, got in the conference. I wasn't in it at all. And he told Neil, go ahead and train them there at Hollywood for a while, but then send me the one that looks to be more precocious. So Neil did. He trained them out there. I'm sure Neil told you this. And then he sent the one horse, which ended up being AP Jet, onto Japan.
Yep.
And he kept AP Indy.
Well, and Dr. Alday also, Steve was there, he said, when those decisions were being made as well. And he also commented on that. And I did not realize that AP Jet, who later on, of course, came to New York and Sugar Maple for John Nayrud.
Sure.
And ended up being a very useful stallion in the New York bred program. And of course, I actually wrote that story when he had that awful stallion fight with Gold Mover that killed Gold Mover. That and AP Jet could have died as a result too of that fight. That was the craziest thing ever. But I didn't realize until AP Indy's death and reading these obits that the other horse was AP Jet.
Yes.
Unbelievable. How quickly, I mean, when you're dealing, and we can kind of morph this into the Harrigan story, when you're looking at these horses and, when they arrive, I mean, how quickly do you seize up, real ability, versus precociousness?
Well, I think, size goes into it, temperament goes into it, but you don't really know until you start to see them move under tack. And, sometimes the smaller one's got a better way of going than this big, beautiful horse who ends up being kind of clumsy. But those two in particular, they were just gliding around there. And, AP Indy even started to develop that, he ran and trained with his head a little bit lower, which is, for me, never a bad thing. In the balance and, where the other horse was a more compact horse, but he was a big horse. But he also just kind of floated around there. But, you kind of see how their disposition, because at that age, they change so much and they respond so much to how you work with them. They don't know. They haven't been ridden. And they get their confidence from the smallest things. You teach one how to lunge in a round pen where he can't possibly do anything wrong. He's going in a confined place. But when you get done and you pat him and say, hey, good boy, and you can just see it in their eyes, they're like, wow, I did something really good today. And they move forward from these little things that you teach them. And you can see the smart ones really get their confidence, and it's why the riders that work for me, we try to tell them that you have to pet these horses, you have to talk to them, because that's their only feedback, and they will respond from that. And then as you go through the winter, as I have horses, young horses through the winter that we break, and you start to see, it's a little different horses that came through the sale versus homebreds that really weren't handled much, but they start to come to the front of the stall and they really look for you to interact with them, and almost give you, like, if you don't stop and talk to them, they give you like the hey. And so it's fun for me to watch them develop, not only physically but mentally, and that's a very important part.
And before we circle back and talk about your development and your career, following AP Indy at that point, obviously, early success at two, and it became a grade one winner in the Hollywood Futurity. I mean, the satisfaction, and this is something, Bill, that, goes, across 30 years of doing what you do, developing young horses, got to be special. Had to be at that time in your career, real satisfaction to see him, become a champion, become a horse of the year, win a classic, win a Breeders' Cup classic as well.
Well, of course it was. Not only through the friendship of me, because I was kind of just getting started, and it takes a big horse that you can hang your name on, and I kind of hung my name on him for a while. I also had the pleasure of having Mineshaft for Mr. Farish. So that was really a cool thing. So, because for a long time, until Bernardini came along, that was AP Indy's best son.
And you know, little did anybody know that you know what Pulpit was going to produce Tappet, and then you know down the road, I mean the tentacles which we just talked about with Sid, of you know in terms of you know all the way here to Honor Code, and who knows, you know, there's the broodmares of his that you know he's going to be the broodmare sire on progeny to come. It's just an amazing legacy.
It is, you know, but it's a combination of where he was raised. Obviously Mr. Farish and Mr. Kilroy breeding the horse, but you know, Lane's End has raised so many good horses, and there's a lot that goes into that, that into their soundness and their development. So he had the class and the pedigree and the ability to pass it on. So it's very, very neat thing for me to be involved in, for sure.
Well, as promised, on to the Harrigan story in itself, which is tremendous. And you don't get the reputation that Bill enjoys, you know, without having a foundation crafted, you know, by being around top horsemen and learning. And I know you're from up here. I know you're from the Capital District, and I know you worked for David Whiteley. And after that, I don't know a lot.
Well, I am. I grew up in Schenectady. My dad was the county judge there for years and years. And I still have a brother and a sister that live up there. And I kind of ran away and joined the circus. And I landed out of high school, David was the one who really insisted that I go away to college, which I did, and graduated from Northeast Missouri State. But at the time when I basically hopped the fence at Belmont and got a job working for David, and it was, I think, 1977, Shug was the assistant there. So then that developed my friendship with Shug, and then I went with Shug to Rockingham Park the first year he had horses and galloped his first winner named Mystery Box, horse that Joe Allen sent up to Shug so he'd have something to run. Rockingham Park.
Unbelievable.
Yep. So, And you know, I started my own farm in 1996 after a stint at Jonabell Farm, and then Jim Igle's Rosemont Farm, and then Esom Ferris was kind of a big step up into the international farm, because Esom had a big racing operation in France, and his farm Ara de Manville, and up in Normandy. And then he eventually bought a farm in just outside of Newmarket, a little bit south of Newmarket, that was just a crop farm, dirt farm, if you will. And I went over there and laid out this farm and developed this farm. It had a small area of some stalls, and it was called New Sells Park. Well, that farm, with all this acreage that we developed into, and kind of did it in a Kentucky style farm where there's bigger fields, more room, and that New Sells Park today is one of the premier breeders in Europe. Hmm. And they bred the horse that won the Arc de Triomphe last year, but they have a big footprint over there in Europe, and you look at these sales and who they breed, it's a big deal. Anyway, that's just a little side thing that I was fortunate to be working for Esom. He bought these properties and we developed them, but when I bought my farm in 1996, you know, I think I know it's 27 or 28 grade one winners that we started out there.
Unbelievable.
But I, you know, so it's close to 100 graded stakes winners, but all, we do a good job, yes, but really that doesn't happen unless you're sent good horses to work with. That's the bottom line. So we're able to teach them the right fundamentals, but I've always been very fortunate in the people who have trusted me and sent me good horses to work with, and that's the bottom line.
Well, when you talk about some of those stops along the way and the people involved, I mean, you were working at Jonah Bell. That's before they sold.
That's after I got out of college. I went back to work for David in New York, and David said, and Shug told me, you need to go to Kentucky to spend a year there to learn the farm thing, you know. So they really looked after me, unbelievably. And they just, you know, they wanted me to see the industry from another level, and then I could come back to the racetrack, which was the plan. But I got there, I worked for Donabell for 2.5 years, and it kind of went on, and then another man named Jim Igel offered me a job, and it's like, well, you know, I'm pretty young, but I might as well take it. And then the Esam Ferris job came up, and that was kind of a big job for a young guy. And then I left Esam, and I went to work for King Ranch.
Oh,
and
wow.
That, when I was there for almost 3 years, Helen Alexander had a lot to do with hiring me there. And so it's like every time I was getting ready to go back to the racetrack, the kind of a new farm opportunity opened up for me. And that working for King Ranch was one of the neatest things because, you know, not only do they have the horse history, but when I went to work there, they were the largest producers of cattle, sugar, cotton, and something else in the United States, you know, and the people that were involved in King Ranch were the classiest people, from Helen and her sisters, right on to her mother. And then I would go down to King Ranch and I'd have for meetings and I'd sit at this table and they'd have the Triple Crown trophy sitting at the middle of the table. So, and Assault and the Middle Grounds Derby and stuff. I mean, it's just I'd pinch myself, and the class of those people really was something I'll never forget, and a big learning experience. And then I had a chance to go on my own. I thought, well, I better do it now, and I did, and that was kind of scary when you do that, but it's all worked out. So here, 23 years later, I'm still in business.
It along the way, and once I guess once you bought the your own farm, you're sort of pitched the tent at that point. Any lure of you know, hanging a shingle and training publicly?
Not really, because at that point I became so, and I always had this, even working at Jonabell. And then on the farms, you know, I just really liked the land, the young horses, the miracle of life when the foal was born, and working with these young horses. And then, you know, even though I spent 6 months in Florida and 6 months in Kentucky, you know, now I'm married and I have children, and you know, that life of the trainer is it's tough. And I have so much respect for those guys. They have to move. You know, it's really difficult on families. So I was pretty satisfied doing what I was doing. And I get a lot out of the horses. In other words, I'm a hands-on person, and, you know, to see them develop their personalities, and I get a lot out of that. And I get a lot out of just walking in the field and the land, and now, you know, we have, I'll probably breed close to, I don't know, probably 18 horses this year, and so that's kind of become a real focus too, is to become a good breeder, and we're every year cutting off the bottom and adding one or two at the top, so.
And those, you're taking those to the sales. I mean, I've seen consignments.
We sell them at Wienlands, yearlings. I have a backup for the two-year-old sale, and then you'll see me run a horse occasionally.
Yeah,
those are horses that we didn't sell, and we decided to keep, and for whatever reason.
Well, it's one of the most potent angles out there. The Harrigan at Keeneland babies. There's always a couple of winners to be found under your name.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's there's never a downtime, really.
And, no. And that's, not if you're doing that. Yeah.
That's good.
People are what they want to hear. They want to hear the list. I know they do. Some of the other names that you had a chance to put a stamp on.
Well, probably the most difficult one, but would be embedded in my heart, was Storm Flag Flying.
Oh, wow.
And she was a tough customer to be around, and another more recent one, although he's just been moved to California, was Gradar. I bought him off of, actually, Will Ferris bred him, and pinhooked him at the Fasig Tipton 2-year-old sale. He was a really cool horse. I would say he and Mineshaft were like two of the smartest young horses I was ever around. You could almost talk to them like almost like a Labrador Retriever or something. They would listen to you, we had some nice horses for Shug, Pleasant Home, Smuggler, and a bunch of other.
Love Smuggler.
Talking
about running low to the ground, did you? You must have had the one she ran like that. She had that anteater, the one that fell in the Breeders' Cup.
Oh yeah, Pine Island.
Pine Island.
Oh God, yes, yeah. Pine Island was mine. Yeah. So, Pine Island. That was a devastating loss, really.
She had that same way, right, Bill? She had that nose to the ground style.
A big old arch filly. She's really offset through her knees, and I remember Shug getting after me. We didn't bring her to Florida during the winter because she was big, and he said just let her knees kind of grow up. And I sent her to him up in September, and he got her, and he says, "What are you doing here? What's this filly? Look at, I can't train." I said, "Shug, I'm telling you, that filly gets over the ground now." And lo and behold, I mean, Wait a While was champion filly that year for Todd, really Pine Island did more. I mean, I was, who knows why the Eclipse Award voters give it to you. But anyway, she passed away. She was out of Matlashay Pass, who I had. And, Mr. Phipps gave all these fillies these great names from where he used to go fishing off of the west coast of Florida over there by Boca Grande.
Boca Grande.
Yeah.
Including Boca Grande, which he named, he used.
Yeah. Well, I had the filly named Boca Grande. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That was when I first worked for them, I had the horses at Palm Beach Downs. And Mr. Phipps used to come down there. And he used to sit there and spend a morning with me about every other week. And he'd tell me stories and he was in his 90s then, what a awesome treat that was for me to sit there and talk with Mr. Phipps, and he'd go over his horses and he'd look at them. And, we had a couple of good horses called Traditionally and Pure Prize, those two come to mind. But Traditionally was out of Personal Ensign by Mr. Prospector.
Yeah.
So. He ended up being a stakes winner at four, won the Oaklawn Park Handicap.
Sure. Well, you took a page from that, because your farm, you call the farm Maya Comet.
Maya Comet is a place on the island of Nantucket.
I was going to say Martha's Vineyard. I knew it was a Cape thing.
Yeah, my parents used to take us out there for a couple weeks every summer growing up, and starting when I was 9 years old. So then we started going out there in the off season when you can really get to know that island. And we met a lot of people, but most people can't pronounce it, but it's a soulful name for me. growing up, kind of not really growing up out there, but I have a sister that lives out there, and so there's family get-togethers out there pretty much every year. Not that I get to go very often, but that's where the name came from.
I love it, and that's a page. That's absolutely a page from the Janny Phipps book. Whenever Shug and I talk, and we. Stewart seems to pull him out of Maine, out of the woods in Maine, and hiking trails, and so that's a great way to name horses and name landmarks.
Those names have meaning,
Bill Harrigan is with us, and a horseman's horseman. If there ever was one, and behind the scenes, developing horses, and I Mr. Evans too, right? Has sent you horses.
I have yearlings for Shell Evans every year. Of course, Toneless being the headliner that we had here, Belmont winner. And you know what? Kind of being off to a sneaky good start as a stud. You know, now that there's three, Toneless is starting to make a little noise for himself as a stallion.
Well, on that topic, actually, Bill, we had that discussion to a degree with Sid just now about, and I made the suggestion that AP Indy is really the, to some degree, this era kind of marked the start of the pendulum swing back toward stamina interest, and I suppose this all comes from the desire to make stallions and win classic races, to win Derby, Preakness, Belmont, Travers, etc. And I really feel like that whole era where people want to seem to accuse American breeding of just being speed crazy. That we've really moved away from it, and you can probably speak to this as well as anybody.
Well, I mean, most of the big races are past a mile, and certainly all of our classic races. Although, now that the turf racing is coming into vogue, if you want to be in the big races on Saturday, most of them. You know, it's interesting with the AP Indy influence. You know, really before Seattle Flu came along, that fire line was dying, and he resurrected it. And if you'll look at Seattle Flu statistics, they are very similar, and at this point, just a touch ahead of AP Indy as far as graded stakes winners and as a broodmare sire. And then, of course, AP Indy comes along and has so many sons, and now sons of it, now his grandsons. He really saved that sire line, and it is in such an important part of our breeding over here.
How do you explain, or do you need to explain, in fact, to owners that this is a horse you're going to have to be patient with and has got talent, and don't expect to win the Champagne and the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. How accepting are our clients of that, and the need to be patient if you're going to maximize your investment?
Well, I mean, fortunately, I've been involved with most of the horses I send out go to really good trainers, and so that's really the conversation that they're going to have. And as young horses, I don't really try to train them other than, again, give them their fundamentals. I get them breezing an easy 3/8 and have their gait work really spot on. And, you know, so that they can then train them as they want to. But most of that goes along with the pedigree and their physical stature. Now, one great thing, and I really learned this from Shug, is that some of these babies that haven't grown up enough, give them all their fundamentals so they know what they're doing. And they, you know, they build up some strength in their bones and they develop some muscle, is take them and give them 3 months off in the summer and pick them back up the 1st of September. And, you know, that doesn't mean that they can't run later on in their 2-year-old year because they've already learned everything. And, I think the best trainers have patience, as you know, throughout history. And, you know, that's something that, you know, all the good trainers, they can size up a horse that needs patience, that needs time, and, you know, some of the best ones, guys like Todd Fletcher, you know, he's the first one to stop on one that needs time, needs to be sent home. Obviously, Shug, Neil Drysdale, you know, you can go on, you know, Chad Brown. I mean, the good guys, they size them up, and they're the ones that have the discussions with the owner. So not really me.
As a final topic, and got about 2-3 minutes to fill out this conversation with Bill Harrigan, and Bill, the 2-year-old in training sale season is upon us. I always have interesting discussions with various entities, you know, in and around. We'll be at OBS March for a couple of days to broadcast from Ocala. We're looking forward to getting down there again. What's your recommendation to people that are going to be buying 2-year-olds at the training sales? Obviously, it's easy to buy horses that went, you know, in 10 flat and 9 and change. But if you want to take a different tact, what's your advice?
Well, again, I think you take into consideration their pedigree and pay attention and see what's this horse's best go. Is it a horse that we want to have for a classic thing? And once they, you know, you've stressed them pretty good, and so they've learned they get the muscle developed and a lot of their bone development. And if they come out of those sales sound, you need to back off and let them kind of come together. I'm not saying stop on them, but each horse is an individual, and there are a lot of good horses come out of the 2-year-old sales. And people can evaluate them on the way they move and their athleticism. And so it's a good place to buy a horse. You just have to temper your expectations, like what the next step is.
It's interesting because I've asked over the years, I've asked many horsemen about, you know, what their philosophy is about going on with them, or taking, you know, giving them a break and, you know, letting them sort of decompress after the intense, you know, the intense circumstances that surround the sales. I mean, it's a fascinating topic, and, you know, it's amazing. You know, there's ones that they work the fastest and they go on to careers, but then, you know, horses that worked in 10 and 3 and nobody paid a lot of attention to, they can be just as successful.
Absolutely. I think for me, I don't like to see so much emphasis put on the time, and which makes the consigners push them probably too hard. But, again, I think you have to evaluate the horse's its temperament, how it comes out. And a lot of that is just how they've, you know, kind of been brought up through the breaking and training thing is, they in a relaxed atmosphere? Are they in a program that teaches them to be relaxed after they breeze? I know here, as we're teaching these young horses, I want to see the horses walk off the track and come back to the barn with their head, you know, just being relaxed. You know, they come leaping off the track and you're trying, you know, all that stuff, and you got to start leading them up there and back. You need to take a look at that and say, hey, we might not be doing the right thing here.
Well, the track record tells you all you need to know. Bill Harrigan has been doing the right thing by the horses that come his way for decades. And AP Indy was one of the early successes that has led to just countless more. Bill, thank you so much for this.
No, thank you. Appreciate you having me on, Steve.
Not at all. Bill Harrigan, everybody, and Maya Comet Farm, and a name that is known behind the scenes and deserves to be as well known as, you know, the names on the program. I apologize to Johnny and Seth Merrow, but Haskins off tomorrow. He's sick, so we'll have room for them and John White, too, and so much more. But I want to thank Bill Harrigan, Sid Fernando, and Dr. Allday, all paying tribute to AP Indy. Pete Fornatale was with us as well. Back with you tomorrow, 9 o'clock. Replay here, 6 to 9 on Sirius XM. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. A few more ovals operating. Talk to you in the morning. Thanks.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Express Bet's popular and profitable $50,000 Beat the Host competition is back in 2020, and this is your chance to win big. Merely place a live $5 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. If your earnings top the host total, you win. Register once and compete Saturdays in January and February for a healthy $2,000 in weekly prizes with no takeout, rake, or skim. Beat the host just once to qualify for the $10,000 championship round. New this year, Beat the Host features a challenging and fun cumulative season-long earnings competition with over $20,000 in prizes paid to the top 10 finishers. Whip hosts in all 8 weeks to earn a share of a sweet $3,000 Sweep the Host bonus. Don't delay. Register today for Beat the Host free at ExpressBet.com.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.